And you were listening to KBOO Portland. It's 5 o'clock. KBOO Evening News is coming up next.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll screen Don't Look Back on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Don't Look Back is a documentary film following Bob Dylan during a three-week concert tour of England in the spring of 1965. The film chronicles Dylan's concert appearances, hotel room conversations, and downtime, pulling back the curtain on Dylan on the cusp of his creative shift towards rock music. Again, that's Don't Look Back on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the film screening From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation, on Thursday, January 10th at the Sunnyside Community House in Portland. From Shock to Awe follows the path of two combat veterans from the Iraq War as they live with post-traumatic stress, lack of effective treatment, and their search for healing and transformation through plant medicine journeys. Again, that's the film screening From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation, on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at the Sunnyside Community House, 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Trump cuts California aid.
A Flint water official is sentenced.
And in international news, happening now, the largest strike in history in India.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 9th, 2019. I'm Jenka Soderberg.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. The man killed by Portland police this past Sunday was legally blind and suffered from schizophrenia. Andre Gladden Sr. was shot and killed while suffering a mental health crisis on Tuesday. Today, his son, Andre Gladden Jr., announced his plan to sue the Portland Police Bureau. Gladden Jr. stated, quote, "Black shootings are a common thing, we all know that. But this isn't just any black shooting. It's a black shooting of my father now. It's not Trayvon Martin, it's my dad," end quote. The killing of Andre Gladden Sr. comes as the Portland Police Bureau continues to struggle in its interactions with people suffering from mental health crises. In 2012, the U.S. Department of Justice described the Portland Police Department as showing a, quote, "pattern of using excessive force against people in a perceived mental health crisis," end quote. The department issued a court ruling that required the police department to change its methods and policies. According to the Treatment Advocacy Center, this is a problem across the country. Mentally ill people are four times as likely to be shot and killed by police. Gladden Jr. told reporters that officers should have tried something different by sending someone out who might understand his mental illness and not treat him like a criminal.
And just to note, the fatal shooting of Andre Gladden Jr. took place on Sunday, not Tuesday. Oregon's newly elected Labor Commissioner Val Hoyle has recused herself from the investigation of sexual harassment at the Oregon State Capitol. Hoyle's predecessor, Brad Avakian, commissioned an investigation which was completed on January 3rd. That investigation concluded that Oregon congressional leaders had not done enough to tackle harassment at the state capitol. Much of the report's conclusion was based on misconduct complaints against former Republican State Senator Jeff Cruz. The case will now be handled by Deputy Commissioner Duke Shepard. According to Labor Commissioner Hoyle, the law requires that she recuse herself because her predecessor is the one who filed the complaint. Hoyle served as House Majority Leader from 2013 to 2015 when some of the complaints took place.
Three public meetings are taking place across Oregon this week as part of an effort to strengthen Oregon's hate crime laws. The listening sessions, which conclude in Medford this evening, following previous meetings in Portland and Eugene on Monday and Tuesday, respectively. The meetings were organized by a task force commissioned by the state's Attorney General, Ellen Rosenblum. Around 160 diverse community members attended the first two meetings and had a chance to discuss their experiences with the Attorney General Rosenblum's task force. This task force includes representatives from the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, Unite Oregon, and statewide law enforcement. The task force was commissioned in May in 2018 in response to rising hate crimes and Oregon's lax laws. The objective hopes to recommend legislation to the legislature during the 2019 session. Tonight's meeting will take place from 6 to 8 p.m. at Medford Library.
Three Oregon fishermen died last night when their boat capsized, crossing the Yakina Bar near Newport. The U.S. Coast Guard was notified at 10 p.m. that their boat, the Mary B-2, had capsized with three people aboard. Rescuers braved 12 to 14-foot seas to find survivors. James Lacey was pulled from the water and taken to a hospital where he was pronounced dead. Joshua Porter's body washed up on a Newport beach, and the boat ran aground on the Yakina Bar North Jetty, where Captain Stephen Bernacki was found dead in the boat.
Some engaged couples will need to find a new place to mail their wedding invitations. The Bridalville post office has been shut down. People used to bring or send their invitations to this ghost town post office at the west end of the Columbia River Gorge to get the Bridalville postmark, which included either two entwined hearts or two entwined doves. The closure is a result of a break-in and vandalism on Christmas Eve. The last lumber mill in Bridalville closed over 30 years ago, and most of the village's remaining buildings belong to the federal government.
And as we reported last week, it's now legal to eat large roadkill in Oregon in accordance with a new law. But if the thought of eating roadkill understandably makes you squeamish, bear in mind that many animal rights activists consider it a more humane way of eating meat than animals that are raised for food consumption. Writing in the Statesman Journal, Heather Moore of the PETA Foundation, that's People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, said if a person wishes to eat animal flesh, it's far more ethical to eat animals who were accidentally killed on highways than those who were killed in slaughterhouses. Unlike cows, chickens, and pigs, most animals who are killed on roads have lived a free life and died a fast, unexpected death. Animals raised for food, on the other hand, are confined to filthy, overcrowded sheds. The law allows people to salvage carcass of large game animals, such as deer and elk, that have accidentally been struck by vehicles. Intentionally hitting these animals, however, remains unlawful, and people are advised they're consuming the meat at their own risk.
The Portland Women's March will be held on a different day this year than the National Women's March, which is set for Saturday, January 19th. In a press release, organizers of the local march discussed the time frame for the Portland Women's March as likely falling around International Women's Day, which takes place on March 8th. The first Portland Women's March was held alongside the National Women's March in 2017, a day after President Trump's inauguration. In Monday's press release, organizers of the local march voiced concerns over charges of racism leveled against organizers of the 2017 National Women's March. The local organizers say they share the concern of many Portlanders about problematic behaviors and statements from the National Women's March, who were accused of making transphobic remarks. In addition, the local organizers said they were also trying to avoid having Portland's march coincide with Martin Luther King Day. The local organizers described themselves as a diverse group of women working to address the racial, social, and economic issues that affect women in Portland. They asked community members to join them in solidarity with the Reclaim MLK March on January 20th and to rally and march together on or around International Women's Day.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for a special report from KBOO News Director Rachel Hartley. At 6, it's Right to Survive, which will discuss a new proposal for a compassionate care district in the Inner East Side of Portland. At 7, it's Combined Culture Radio. Tonight's weather, 100% chance of rain, a bit of wind, and a high of 50 degrees. Tomorrow, only a 50% chance of rain, high of 55 degrees, and continuing wind. Today in history, in 1776, Thomas Paine published Common Sense, an attack on the British king and a call for American independence. The quote of the day is from Thomas Paine, who said, "Government, even in its best state, is but a necessary evil. In its worst state, an intolerable one."
In Maryland, state legislators are fighting back against foreclosures resulting from excessive water bills. This bill would protect residents from losing their homes and churches over high and often inaccurate water bills. For more, we turn to this report from the Real News Network.
Senator Mary Washington and Delegate Nick Mosby announced that they will introduce legislation to prevent Baltimoreans from losing their homes and churches due to unpaid water bills.
It's time to forever remove water bills from the tax sale foreclosure abyss that has engulfed far too many of our residents and property owners for far too long.
In a church basement on North Avenue, the legislators stood beside faith leaders and civil rights advocates and announced the reintroduction of the Water Taxpayer Protection Act, which would bar the city from sending homes and churches to tax sale because of overdue water bills.
Not only are you making people homeless, you're dipping into their assets, the one thing that they have of value.
Each year, Baltimore auctions off liens on thousands of properties to collect unpaid taxes and fees owed to the city. In 2017, the city sent almost 11,000 homes to tax sale, and over 70% of those were triggered by water bills. Some say the practice is an important way for the city to raise revenue, but critics call it inhumane.
The reality is the loss of a property over something as minuscule as your water bill is just completely unconscionable in 2019.
Mosby and Washington say the practice is unnecessary.
The officials managing WSSC, Maryland's largest public system, have repeatedly rejected attempts by special interests to use tax sale foreclosure to collect unpaid water bills. If selling homes from water bills doesn't make sense in Prince George's County or Montgomery County, and they've decided that they do not want to punish vulnerable residents already struggling to cover the cost of water, then it certainly does not make sense to do this in Baltimore City.
Last year, then-Delegate Mary Washington introduced similar legislation, but it failed in the Senate. Instead, the state passed a watered-down year-long moratorium on water liens for 2019. The legislation Washington and Mosby will propose this session would expand the existing moratorium. It would make it permanent, create protections for places of worship, and ensure that water bills cannot compound with other unpaid bills to trigger tax sale.
You could owe $50 or $100 for an alarm that went off, right? So, and then that's another process that actually is eligible for tax sale foreclosure. You could add that to your $500 water bill, and then together, then that could go to tax sale. What this would say is that that $400 or that $750 that you owe in water is not included in that total.
Councilwoman Shannon Sneed also announced a city council resolution that will call on the General Assembly to pass the bill. Supporters say the measure is urgent because water is increasingly unaffordable.
Water rates have more than quadrupled since the year 2000, and another three-year 30% rate increase will be voted on by the Board of Estimates this coming Wednesday. Water rates are currently unaffordable for more than a third of our city's residents, and this impending rate hike, if approved, will only deepen our city's water affordability crisis.
And residents aren't just getting high bills. Sometimes they're getting incorrect ones.
There are stories of families receiving bills ranging from a couple thousand dollars up to $50,000 for just 1 month of usage. These incorrect bills have wrongfully landed families on the tax sale list and nearly cost many their homes.
Baltimore City resident Kimberly Armstrong says this happened to her. Erroneous water bills sent her home to the tax sale list twice. In 2014, she got a $1,400 bill. And in 2017, she got a bill for $2,500.
And so when my house went into tax sale, my mortgage company would always get my house out of tax sale, but however, whatever they paid would go into my escrow account, which made my mortgage go up each time. So now my mortgage is like double what it was in 2014.
City Council President Jack Young has also introduced a measure for income-based water billing. But Mosby and Washington say even if that passes, their proposed state legislation is still necessary.
It is just fundamentally wrong to sell someone's home for an unpaid water bill at tax sale. So it is a very separate issue. This is not a negotiation. It doesn't say, okay, if I have a better system, which we should anyway, we can't use this process. And in fact, I think if we take this away, it will force better accountability.
Supporters say this year they've got what it takes to pass this bill.
Well, it's my hope that the city delegation, meaning the House side and Senate side, as well as the city council through a resolution, can all collectively come together, stand shoulder to shoulder with our most vulnerable residents, saying that this practice should no longer be in existence in the city of Baltimore.
We reached out to Baltimore's Department of Public Works for their thoughts on this legislation, but they said they weren't yet prepared to comment. For The Real News with Taylor Hebden, Tharna Noor, Baltimore.
And this from the Detroit Free Press. Michigan's former drinking water regulator has pleaded no contest to a misdemeanor in the Flint water investigation. This is a good deal for Lane Schechter-Smith, who was facing felony charges. Among those charges were involuntary manslaughter because of the people who died from drinking Flint's tainted drinking water. Smith pleaded no contest Monday to disturbance of a lawful meeting and agreed to testify against others if necessary. Seven people have now resolved their cases with misdemeanor pleas. Flint's water was contaminated with lead when the city switched sources in 2014 and didn't treat water to reduce corrosion. A former state health director and a state doctor are still awaiting trial on involuntary manslaughter charges. These charges are related to a Legionnaires outbreak that was blamed on the water.
With wildfires growing larger and more destructive in California and elsewhere, what's a president to do? If the president is Trump, the answer is cut off FEMA funding to help Californians affected by those fires. Trump continues to blame California's forestry management for the fires, including the largest fire ever in the state, as well as the destruction of paradise in November. Senator Jeff Merkley said Trump's threat, quote, deserves a 5-star award for idiocy.
And now, it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Trump made a case for a border wall during his Oval Office address Tuesday night, saying there's a crisis at the southern border, and the wall would address illegal immigration, drugs, and crime. Congressional Democratic leaders were quick to denounce the wall. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer say the president is manufacturing a crisis and called for an end to the partial government shutdown now in week three. Tribes across the country are feeling the impacts of the shutdown, including on the Wind River Reservation, as Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports.
Already, some seasonal transportation employees had to be laid off because of the shutdown. Eastern Shoshone Counselor Leslie Shakespeare says the U.S. Bureau of Indian Affairs also canceled a regular meeting to determine how much to pay tribal members in their per capita checks. That's their cut on profits from oil and gas projects in the reservation. He says because of the shutdown, tribal members won't get those checks in February.
Those are small amounts, but they're amounts that they're able to survive on. And those amounts aren't there, then it becomes an issue because now they don't have nothing to survive on for the next month.
The Northern Arapaho tribe that shares the reservation took over management of its federal health clinic 3 years ago. That means most health care workers can still get their paychecks. But Wind River Cares Clinic CEO Richard Brannon says every month the government covers only 32% of their health care needs. And because of the shutdown, that's shrunk to just 20%.
We're already starting out at negative 68%, and so what little money we do receive has even more more profound effect on us than if another clinic that receives 100% of funding.
He says the shutdown has also hurt the morale of the clinic's remaining federal employees that are right now working without pay. I'm Melody Edwards.
People on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation want to see more done when Indigenous women go missing. The community recently held services for Henny Scott, who was found dead in December, about 3 weeks after her family last spoke with her. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche has more.
There's a large white teepee set up in the front yard and a fire in front of it. People come and go in the hours before the funeral, and family friend Dean Wallowing Bull is among them.
This fire will burn until they get ready to go and lay her to rest, and then the fire will be extinguished. It'll go out like our lives.
On December 28th, a search party discovered the body of 14-year-old Henny Scott outside Lame Deer. Henny's mother, Paula Castro, stops, sits in the teepee, and talks about Henny.
She was into everything. There was nothing she couldn't do. She could do it all. She started taking up beading, and which I was proud of. She started learning Cheyenne, and her teacher commented how well she was doing.
Castro Stops also speaks about the difficulty of getting help from the authorities when she noticed her daughter was missing. She says she had to speak with law enforcement on both the Northern Cheyenne and the Crow reservations before they stepped in. Castro Stops says she wants to see that change.
I want something done. I want like a process to where it's not going to take this long. You don't have to jump through hoops that they do their job and, you know, take you seriously.
Castro Stops, together with Wallowing Bull and other members of the community, are trying to change what they see as a flawed system. Wallowing Bull has been helping to organize marches in the community of Lame Deer and says they want to remember Henny. They also want to remember her death and the actions that followed. For National Native News, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
When does a no vote not mean no? Apparently, when you're Mitch McConnell. After the Senate voted last night to not move forward on a vote on S1, Republican Senator McConnell is trying to force a vote. The bill would encourage states to deny contracts to people who support boycotts for Palestinian rights and authorize $38 billion in weapons for Israel. The Senate will likely vote on the same motion later today. Very rarely does the Senate vote on a bill twice so quickly. Josh Rubner, policy director for the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, tweeted that McConnell apparently has no more important business to take care of in the Senate than trying to force a vote twice in 24 hours to strip away our First Amendment right to boycott for Palestinian rights. McConnell has not yet scheduled a vote on the House-approved bill to reopen the federal government, and he has been criticized for turning the shutdown into a debate on Israel and Palestine.
And Brazil will no longer honor the UN Migration Accord. In a speech this morning, President Jair Bolsonaro announced his far-right government's withdrawal from the accord, which the country signed alongside 163 other UN member countries in December. The UN Migration Accord, also titled the Global Compact for Migration, sought to establish practices for the promotion of safe, orderly, and humane migration. Bolsonaro's announcement further aligns his presidency with right-wing movements globally, which have used migration as a scapegoat for issues such as economic stagnation. His peers include people like Donald Trump and Hungary's Viktor Orban, whose governments, alongside Austria, Bulgaria, the Czech Republic, Poland, Slovakia, Australia, and Israel, also withdrew or refused to sign the UN Migration Accord. Today's withdrawal further shifts Brazil away from the country's previously liberal migration policies, even though migration was not a central debate in Brazil's 2018 elections. On Twitter, Bolsonaro stated, quote, "Anyone who comes here must be subject to our laws and customs, must sing our national anthem, and respect our culture." Bolsonaro's announcement comes just a week after he issued a sweeping series of executive orders, which specifically targeted Brazil's indigenous, black, and LGBTQ communities. Many have expressed fear of what is to come in Brazil.
The largest strike in history is happening right now in India. Over 180 million Indian workers blocked railways and highways and shut down banking services. The shutdown was part of a two-day general strike against the anti-union and economic policies of the current right-wing government in power in India. The strike, which began on Tuesday and ends today, was organized by the Center of Indian Trade Unions and a number of independent federations. The strike came in response to proposed labor reforms approved by the Indian Prime Minister's cabinet last week. The cabinet approved an amendment to the Trade Unions Act of 1926. This new amendment would give the government discretionary power over whether or not to recognize unions. Sectors involved in the strike include telecommunications, health, education, coal, steel, electricity, banking, insurance, and transportation. In a joint statement, leading unions condemned what they called the Modi government's aggressive, arrogant attack on the lives and livelihood of the working people of India.
And you're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 9th, 2019. Here are the main points again. Trump cuts California wildfire aid. Flint water official was sentenced to misdemeanor charges. And in international news, happening right now is the largest strike in history in India. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Emily Gresham Beamer, Ollie Mintz Lowe, and Dan Raphael. Our engineer is David Kesters. The evening news and public affairs director is Rachel Hartley. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jenka Soderberg.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Thanks.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael has a confession.
I watched Trump last night. Sounds like he's having trouble breathing. I could have several PhDs if no one fact-checked what I wrote or said. If I'd taken a drink each time Trump lied, I'd have blacked out before Pelosi and Schumer. No loss. It's not about the wall. It's about hate, distraction, and power. The government shutdown is a taste of the future after the wealthy totally eviscerate the government. Hey, House of Representatives, represent. Or are the real districts just the spaces between billionaires? If senators speak for their states, is that the people who live there or the money that can be extracted there? Somebody do something. Break this political paralysis. Do your friggin' jobs. Everyone in Washington so afraid to send Trump something he'll veto, but how many bills has he vetoed? Zero. We have nothing to fear but zero. Doing zero. Changing zero. Be a hero. Stand up. One by one, let's be counted and add up to something. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.